I'm Eric Warista.
This is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam, the Revs are 0-4 in the league. Where do we start?
It's a difficult topic where to start. They are 4-0 in the CONCACAF Champions League, the exact opposite in MLS. And I think the answer is kind of clear to me, and just that MLS as a league has a higher level of quality than I thought. And the Revs are having trouble breaking through.
Yeah, there's definitely a mismatch between the level of play in these first two round games in the CONCACAF Champions League versus the level of play in early season MLS, which is usually not a very high standard, but it's a higher standard than the Revs have seen in the Champions League, and it's a higher standard than what they've been able to match in the league so far this year.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if it's with Messi playing a full season this year, if the teams are amped up and wanting to show their quality. But the Revs lost again today, was at the stadium, another beautiful afternoon. And it kind of became clear. It was sort of like if you know how coaches, they want to watch game tape. This game was an explanation of how a game is won or lost at the margins.
How so?
So I had noted down in my notes, as I take notes for the podcast, the first half, actually, I thought was the Revs' probably best half so far this season in MLS. It was pretty well under control. It was a little bit slow at times. There were certainly some things that they could have taken advantage of. But the second half was certainly plenty of excitement. Three goals between the two teams. But it started with Ravas making a mistake on a corner kick.
Revs' new goalie, Heinrich Ravas.
Correct, right. So the new goalkeeper, he's done well in the Champions League games, but has been challenged with MLS. And he definitely made some good shot stops today. But just as an example of how the Revs looked like a pretty decent side, but a few mistakes here around the edges, the margins, is what ultimately is their undoing. So you have that play. You had a few giveaways during the run of play in general. Chankalai hit the crossbar on a one-on-one situation with the goalkeeper trying to chip it over. Maybe that was Chankalai's only shot there, but had to score on that one. You had Jones losing a ball on a throw-in in the 88th minute, plus a few other mistakes in the half. You had an injury time in the second half corner kick that goes back to the midfield somehow. How does that happen? And you had Kay sending a long center cross into the middle of the box. It went right to the keeper. And you just see these little things, and it adds up. And I feel like in years past, we've talked about this before, where you had a goalkeeper like Matt Turner or Petrovic that could make up for any kind of mistakes that other players were making on the field and helped the Revs win games or kept them in games standing on their heads. That isn't there with the team this year, at least right now. And then you have the other players who are just not clicking as well as they used to. And so you have the quality of play that is at times pretty good. Of course, you have Carlos Gil and Chankalai and Jones and lots of players that we all know and love, but something isn't quite the same in terms of their chemistry. And you put those together, and it's those little things around the field that today it was very clear what did them in.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think if you look at the first half today, the Revs seem to be in a little bit better control of the game. They had a number of shots on goal, and you know, the announcers, I was at home today, the announcers were mentioning that Chankalai was third in the league in shots this year. He doesn't have any goals in the league, but he's third in the year in shots. And after today, he's actually second in the league in shots. But again, no goals in 360 minutes, and missed a very, I don't want to say an easy chance, but one that I think he would like to have back.
Yeah, there were some crazy shots today that went way over crossbars. Actually, Chankalai hit one in the first half that he was running from left to right across the goal. outside the penalty box, and he nailed the shot that made it all the way to the far corner flag. Of course, you know, that can happen to anybody. But again, it's just another example. You know, it's interesting you bring up shots on goal or total shots. So there's a couple changes at the game experience. I think we might have talked about one, that they now have injury time on the game clock inside the stadium. It used to be just a TV thing. Mm-hmm. But it's really nice now, like when the referee says, okay, there's 8 minutes of stoppage time in the second half, you know where you are with the clock, which is, I think that's a net plus. The other change today, though, was that instead of there's like a scoreboard banner that runs around the sort of halfway around the stadium or halfway up the stadium,
right
between the balconies and the lower seating, and it has a couple of key stats. They used to have shots on goal and corner kicks in the score, something like that, and now it has shots, not shots on goal. And I noticed because the Revolution shot count kept going up, and I'm just so used to seeing shots on goal. They had maybe 14 shots, 17 shots, a lot of shots in the game. Certainly not all of them were on goal, but now they're, I think it, the optics, I think it's because the optics are better for a team that's doing so poorly. Oh, look, they're getting some shots.
Yeah, that's a good, so they're juking the stats in the wire parlance. They're juking the stats.
Right. Like, who really cares how many shots you have? Like, if you took a shot and it hits the corner flag, like, that's not a shot. It kind of reminds me, too, of this other statistic that they've been talking a lot on Apple TV and the broadcast. I feel like they have to, maybe because it's related to the new sort of betting company relationships, but there's this win probability statistic. Mm-hmm. So this was last weekend. The Revs were down in Atlanta. It was going to be a tough game, and they were kind of hanging in there in the first half, sort of like today's game, actually. But the announcers kept going off about the win probability, and it was like slightly above 50% for Atlanta or below, or like that whole statistic doesn't make any sense unless maybe if you're into betting it does, or it's helpful, or it can mean something. But when the score is 0-0 in a football match, a soccer match, in like the 30th minute, does win probability mean anything?
Yeah, it's hard to, it almost seems like they're overanalyzing the data at that point. Like if you have, now I think it's probably just a function of expected goals. So if you have created a lot of chances, but still 0-0, then maybe your win probability inches up. Although psychologically, maybe it inches down because you've had these chances and haven't converted. And, you know, expected goals today was pretty close. It was 1.4 for Cincinnati and 1.2 for the Revs. Which seemed fair. It's just Cincinnati had so much, their chances were handled so much more clinically than the Rev chance.
Right. Well, that's another statistic too, this expected goals statistic, which started to come out, I feel like, during the pandemic, and it was sort of interesting. But even Brad Feldman and Clyde Sims on the post-game show on 98.5 were talking about that, and I thought I heard them say, and maybe I misheard, that the Revs actually had higher expected goals through the game than Cincinnati did. And so it was sort of backing up my point that these statistics are effectively meaningless. Like, what does expected goals mean if you can't put the ball in the back of the net, if you can't be clinical?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's been the Revs' problem. I feel like this year the problem has been in the league that they haven't converted chances, so they haven't scored a lot of goals. And then as soon as they give up one goal, they give up another one very quickly. Like the whole game falls right apart. And yeah, I'm not sure why that should be the case, why that should be different this year. You know, I think they do miss having Brandon Bae on the field. He's such a good defender and you know, had become a bit better on the offensive end as well. Still a lot of crosses with him, but you know, obviously more than a above average defender.
Right.
You know, what else is different this year? Maybe it's some of the things off the field. So our lobbying campaign against the shirt, the t-shirt, which was successful, but now the team's 0-4 without it. Maybe that t-shirt was pumping oxygen into the stadium. at field
you're
level.
You're making me feel guilty. I'm not sure if we can take the victory points on that yet. The stadium does look, I think, much more professional without the t-shirt. But to your point, maybe there was some kind of intimidation factor that we just weren't aware of.
With
that monster t-shirt lurking in the corner that was perhaps distracting and just enough for the other team that they would miss a pass. Or like I mentioned, the game is won in the margins. Maybe it did play something in the margins.
Right. Yeah. I'm not willing to give up on our thesis that it's good that it's gone yet, but it certainly, you know, there seems to be, if not a causation, there's a correlation so far. And then
yes,
you mentioned that we had talked about the tee boxes before the game. Did they throw the Cincinnati tee onto the field this week?
Yes, the tee boxes. So today there was a little bit of a change with the tee boxes. There was like five or six tee boxes that were thrown over the wall onto the, you know, the no man's land and below the wall there in back of the goal. About five or six boxes.
Hmm. And the net effect was better or worse or about the same?
It's still a questionable thing for me. I feel like nobody really noticed it. There's no like big cheer that comes up. You don't know when it's starting. I think it just happened to be looking over or I think my son might have mentioned, oh, look. And then all of a sudden these white sort of big boxes get thrown over the side. I could see it working better at some point, and maybe if it gets more recognition it could take off. But it kind of reminds me in that sense of the cheer that the Revolution play through the loudspeakers when the teams come on, One New England, Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's got something to it. I think it's pretty cool, and I liked it when it came out, but it just never caught on with the fandom.
Right.
It's just not something that people tend to sing. And so this could be something similar to that, where they're waiting or hoping that it'll take off. The question is still out there for me if it's going to work.
Yeah, I agree. And some of it for me is that they just sort of look like generic cardboard boxes with the opponent stenciled on the side. You know, maybe if it looked more like a tea crate. I also wrote down maybe if it was on fire. Or maybe if it exploded when it hit the ground,
something like that.
Something a little more visual, because it goes over the edge and it just sort of like thuds on the ground.
It disappears, and nothing happens. It just lacks. It has nothing on Timber Joey, or you know maybe some other celebrations around the league.
Yeah, like what if they started it? What if they started it at the top of the fort, and everyone passed it down overhead?
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then they threw it, you know, that would get more people involved. And then they threw it onto the field. I don't know. And then they shot it with the muskets. Like, I don't know how to finish this thing that they're doing.
It might be cool if it got passed around the stadium, kind of like the wave, like it was like a thing.
Oh, interesting.
And maybe you dump it. Maybe they have to dump it on the opponent's bench. Maybe that's just... I mean, and even the timing, because the Revolution usually start from that half. Most games, they're defending that half. So there's no connection to like what's happening on the field. But maybe if it's sort of like launched into the opponent's bench area, that might be a little bit more exciting for everybody.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I would have a guy stand at the top of the fort, and you know, yell something like, throw the tee into the sea and then pass it down over the fans and have them throw it onto the field. And then maybe just have the muskets fire when it, not at the tee, but just have the muskets fire when the tee hits the ground.
Maybe they need like a cannon or something like even bigger to make that event. Like it's just something special.
It's just missing something to really get you to care and pay attention and sort of have a little more visual interest, I think.
Right.
All right, well, that's probably enough on the tee, but the season doesn't get much easier. If you look at the league, you know, the Revs, you have to scroll. Miami and a couple other teams are on top with 10 points. If you scroll all the way down and then keep scrolling and keep scrolling, you'll find the Revs at the bottom.
You really got to hit that table.
Yeah, they're down there. San Jose and the Revs, the only two teams without a point after the first 4 or 5 weeks here. And
the Revs are in the relegation zone.
Right. Yeah, if such a thing existed, they would be in big, big trouble. And then the Champions League, which I guess has been rebranded the Champions Cup, they have a home and home with Club America. So they're home against Club America, and then they have to go to Azteca Stadium for the second leg because there's a monster truck rally or motorbike rally at Gillette. So they had to flip the dates. Originally, they had the second leg here.
Right, yeah. And I had already made travel plans based on the original schedule. It just, the whole thing, the tee boxes, the scheduling, it all just fits in with the state of the club. You know, I wasn't expecting with the new manager and the people that we have on the roster that we would be 0-4, but here we are at the bottom of the table.
Right, but if there's one thing we know, it's that it's a long, long season. They don't even have the playoff red line on the standings on the MLS homepage yet. But I'm guessing the Revs probably only need about 6 points to get into the playoff zone. Way too early to think about that, but some reasons for optimism. And
some reasons for optimism. Okay. You know, I'm going to be happy with creating my own relegation line. So as long as the Revs get out of the bottom three, I think that'll be the excitement for the season.
All right. Well, one win should get them there. So we'll look forward to the next game in the Champions League, and we'll be back with more soon.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warista and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warista and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warista. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution.